Maui Nui is on a mission to help balance axis deer populations for the good of our environment, communities, and food systems on the island of Maui. They've shared over 126,000 pounds of nutrient-dense protein with the Maui community. Secure your spot now. Become a snack subscriber and join in helping to build more resilient food and ecosystems on Maui. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com. That's MauiNuiVenison.com. And use promo code BEAR for 20% off your first order.
I'm sure a lot of you guys remember the old ceremonial hunting tradition of eating the heart out of the first animal you kill. Meat from those organs are among the most nutrient-rich foods on the planet. You can get those same benefits your ancestors craved via convenient daily capsules from Heart and Soil. Find out more at heartandsoil.co. And remember, use code MeatEater for 10% off your purchase. You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.
My name is Clay Newcomb, and this is a production of the Bear Grease Podcast called the Bear Grease Render, where we render down, dive deeper, and look behind the scenes of the actual Bear Grease Podcast. Presented by FHF Gear, American-made, purpose-built hunting and fishing gear that's designed to be as rugged as the places we explore. Welcome to the Bear Grease Render. We've got a great cast of characters here today to talk about one of the best Bear Grease podcasts in a long time, in my opinion. I don't want to show my whole hand too quickly.
But, so listen to this one and then forget the rest.
Well, it's up to you. But so this is the Bear Grease Render. If you're new to the Bear Grease Render, this is where we gather a group of. We have six of us here today.
Experts.
Six experts, and we talk about the Bear Grease. There's five of us here. Six of us. There's six of us here, and we talk about the actual documentary-style Bear Grease podcast. So if you're new to Bear Grease, this is what we're doing. I want to pitch an idea to you guys here, regulars on the render. Let me introduce. To my right, we're going backwards today.
Oh.
To my right, Gary Believer Newcomb, my father. Good to see you.
In the flesh.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I bet you liked this episode.
I loved it.
I knew you would. To my dad's right, Josh Lambridge Spillmaker.
I'm just glad I'm back because this podcast has gone to pot.
Josh hadn't been on a render in a long time.
Fresh
we're
going
to come back to
cart.
You. I'm going to tell you the different things we're going to talk about. We're going to come back and talk to you about a buck. I'm not going to spill the beans, but great to see you, Josh.
Thank you.
Your beard's looking great. The land bridge is looking good. To your right, my lovely wife, Dr. Misty Newcomb. Great to see you, Doctor.
This is the only place I get called Doctor.
This is the only place.
The
I mean,
Bear
it's like, what use is a PhD if you never even use it? What's that?
Exactly. Why, if you're not going to get called, don't spill why did you go get it?
Yeah.
It's a long story, Josh.
So Misty has some very insightful comments that she would like to give about women.
Oh.
Whoa. Yeah. That's a big
it's great.
I would say she's probably
really
more qualified than anyone in the room.
to your right, Isaac Neal. Isaac, great to see you.
Hey, it's good to be
Isaac
here.
Isaac works for Bear Grease.
Yeah. I'm sure my wife is very excited for me to receive this insightful information.
Have her
about
listen
women.
To what Misty's gonna say. It's gonna be big.
Lower
this is gonna change our relationship.
Lower expectations.
It's good. It's that good. And to Isaac's right. The one and only Brent Reeves. Brent, good to see you.
You're really
looking sharp today.
Man, I tell you, only thing I know about women is they've been in my trouble since I figured out they wasn't men. That's
Wow. There's a lot there. There's okay. a lot to unpack there.
Okay. Okay. That's a Waylon Jennings, a line from a Waylon Jennings song. Oh.
Okay.
Well, Alexis, get back in your chair. Sorry.
Well, you have some great women in your life. Absolutely. As do I.
Of course.
Brent is wearing a full cry. That hat, when I saw it, I hadn't mentioned your hat yet. I really wish I had a hat like that. I would wear it. It's a vintage foam trucker hat with full cry. So full cry is a print coon hunting, hound hunting magazine that has just been kind of revitalized by one of our friends out in Washington, Jason and Doobie, and his wife.
Danny. Yeah.
And full cry is an old school. I think it was started in the 1940s.
No, 1939.
Whoa. Is that right?
Wow. Yeah.
Okay, 1939. Wow. Full cry was started. It's a print magazine.
They got a good shout out in the podcast.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I love it. I'm an old full cry man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My picture was in Full Cry magazine in 1994.
How old were you?
I was 16.
Okay.
And I had just got Newcomb's Southern Ouachita Blue Thunder.
Okay.
Registered blue tick and sent in a picture to like the readers submissions.
Yeah.
And Dad, I think you took the picture right out in front of our house of me with a little puppy.
The photo
was wearing my Carhartt hat. And
your outdoor career has been downhill ever since.
Yeah.
You peaked early.
Let me tell you what, Clay Full Newcomb cry. Is more excited about those dog papers than he is. He feels the same way about those as I feel about when we get the kids' social security numbers in. It's like, man, I name this thing.
I can see that.
What's your point?
Okay, so I just had to mention Brent's hat and just how sharp he looked.
Yeah, man.
Here's my pitch to you guys. That I'm very, very seriously considering is, you know how the talk show hosts,
yeah.
You're going to think of this as a joke. This is not a joke, okay? The late night talk show hosts have a live band that's just always there, just always waiting.
Oh, yeah.
Start out with a song,
intros,
end with
outros.
A song, something funny happens, and you're like, go.
Yeah.
I want a banjo player here all the time. No, it can't be Misty.
I mean, to be the laugher. Like, you know, the person that sits on the edge.
It's
got to
be
like
somebody with
comments.
Like not a whole lot of personality, but just kind of like just.
The personality comes out in the banjo.
Right. I mean, because their job is not really to talk.
Yeah.
But I would kind of lean on them like Jimmy Fallon leans on his guy occasionally for input, like outside input.
You're looking for a banjo playing Questlove.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't need necessarily a contributor.
Yeah.
But I would be like, imagine this. Podcast starts, intro's over. And I go, hit it, JB.
Yeah.
Bang, 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 bang. And then we start talking. Thanks, man. And then I'm like, halfway through after a good story, I'm like, JB, hit a lick. Like somebody tells a real boring story.
Yeah.
It's like too long.
I'll be honest.
I'll be like, hit it, JB.
A little bit like this is Clay's expectations for me just in our normal everyday life.
Like banjo playing?
Not the banjo playing, but just the like support, the hit it, Misty. I mean, this introduction comment about the insightful feedback I've got for women. I don't know, man.
Well, and it's got a, you know, I like musicians that just come in and out of your life.
Well, are you
like a radio dial?
Are you advertising this position?
Nope. It'll be appointed like a dictator appointing like a lead person to oversee something in his government.
He doesn't realize
Secretary
it, but he's
banjo.
Much more into
banjo czar.
A dictator, you know, type of government than
I'll take a
benevolent dictator.
I'll take a benevolent dictator over a crooked politician any day.
Wow.
A crooked elected politician.
We're going right into it. We're going right
this
into it.
This is great, man. I've been energized. Energized. Yeah, yeah. Go, JB. I've been energized by the story and life of Barry Tarleton.
Yeah. It was a good
big
story.
Time. So good. We're going to talk about that. Brent, so just a little follow-up. Ken's reward. If you remember on last episode of Bear Grease, Brent told a story about getting an American quarter horse named Ken's Reward. And we put out an APB to the world about getting this information. Many people have responded about that. And Ken's Reward was an actual horse.
Yep.
He was born, and we had multiple people send us the papers. So yep. It was
a really?
Give a little context for people who didn't listen.
Yeah, so Brent has a podcast called This Country Life, and that's another complicated part of being in the Bear Grease world. This isn't like a normal podcast where you just like commitment. Turn it on, and it's mm-hmm. like two or three guys just yeah. like yipping all the time.
Yep.
No, you got to have your brain on. See, there's the Bear Grease documentary style podcast, the Bear Grease render, and This Country Life. This Country Life comes out every Friday. That's Brent's podcast. It's usually like 22 and a half minutes long.
Okay.
And it's a great, excellent, very well written, beautiful look into rural America.
Very good.
So Brent told a story about
wildly
a quarter horse.
Wildly
entertaining. Brent told a story on his podcast about his dad in the 1980s buying him a quarter horse at a great deal.
And if you'd have listened, you'd known that.
In Ada, Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Brought it home, yeah. And the horse was a bronc. It bucked him off four times, and then the saga of the horse is pretty wild, and the horse gets sold very quickly.
Yeah.
How long was that period of time?
Well, we didn't use up a sack of feed before he left.
And so I wanted to know the story of Ken's Reward. Happened? Where did
the progeny?
Who is Ken?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's if you're a normal human and you hear that story, the first question you're asking is who's Ken and how is this horse's reward?
Yeah.
Maybe Ken was a real jerk.
How did he lose it?
Yeah,
I mean, it slipped through his hands like water.
Yeah. I think it may have been a sort of tongue in cheek name. He may have been a dirtbag.
Well, that's what we want to know.
Yeah.
And so
Ken.
We've had many people that have sent us. Like, I was looking at the registration papers for the American Quarter Horse Ken's Reward.
Whoa.
You can track it back generations. The horse was born on April 1st, 1979.
Yeah.
Interestingly, the year of my birth.
Whoa.
Oh.
I was 13.
You were 13. And the horse died on January 1st, New Year's Day, 2004, at almost the age of 25.
Wow.
Wow.
So, and Brent would have had it.
That part, I didn't know that.
Yeah, the horse died in 2004. So when do you think you had it?
It would have been 1988.
So the horse would have been 7 or 8 years old, mm-hmm. just long enough to let the world know that it's a bronc.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. They,
up until they're about five, you kind of giving them a chance.
Yeah. Like, they were dissatisfied. They were dissatisfied with his bucking ability. I thought it was excellent.
So, anyway, but the APB that went to the world was that if I could talk to Ken or Ken's family and we could understand why the horse was named Ken's Reward, that I would give him a genuine plot-treed coonskin hat, and Brent would give him a case knife.
Okay.
We've had many generous donations to the information bin, but mm-hmm. nobody has yet to bring us real answers that we're looking for. So anyway, it's still out there.
We still don't know who, I mean, because clearly this horse was someone's reward.
We don't know who Ken is.
Yeah. We don't know who Ken is.
Because even though the horse is gone, Ken might be still around.
Yeah, we hope so.
For his sake.
We hope Ken's around. We're rooting for you, Ken.
Yeah.
Wherever you are.
Plus, I mean, one of those coonskin hats, we know they're valued about $2,500.
So Josh Spillmaker made those for me. Josh takes a coon and a half to make one of those.
Mm-hmm.
You hand stitch them?
I'm part of it.
Josh is a gifted craftsman.
What do you call a hat maker?
A furrier.
The hatter.
A hatter is the term for someone who makes men's hats.
Yeah.
Okay.
And a milliner is someone who makes women's hats.
Okay. Josh, are you interested in people buying hats from you?
Not at the moment.
He's interested in fishing.
In a few short months, he'll be interested.
Josh is a hatter. Summer, he makes felt cowboy hats.
Very
and
nice
different things.
Ones.
But he made all these coonskin hats for me. Mm-hmm. And so
I've had a few people reach out to me on Instagram, and I apologize for, you know, we've gone back and forth, but my time is not right now. Yeah, not available.
Maybe one day.
You know, there's a special sewing machine with a hook needle just for stitching fur on material.
Oh, really?
It's crazy.
Hmm. Maybe Josh could get that. Josh, you then, killed. Josh killed a big buck this week.
I think we're using that term loosely.
I'd call it a big
or
buck.
Week
this week.
But it. I have to say, I have a very generous friend named Brian who's let me come out and hunt on his property.
I'm a little jealous of Brian.
Yeah, you should be. He's a great guy. but I went out and killed a doe. I haven't hunted in about 10 years.
Right.
I've dedicated my life to fishing. But I really wanted to kill a deer this year, and I got a new rifle, a Weatherby rifle with a Vortex scope.
Yep.
Shout out to Weatherby and Vortex.
Yeah, don't get any better.
And really wanted to kill a deer this year, so I went out and a couple weeks ago and killed a doe just to put some meat in the freezer. And Brian said, "Man, you got to get back out here and kill a buck." So I went out last weekend and sat in the stand for several hours. Saw a beautiful thick coated coyote I was going to take a shot at, but he was just moving too fast. Saw a couple of spikes, saw a couple of does. Felt like I had a great morning. I figured my morning was over. It was getting close to 10 o'clock, and out walks this beautiful, big-bodied 9-point buck. And it was kind of like, you know, when you're walking through a haunted house and somebody like jumps out at you?
Yeah.
I felt like that was my reaction when I saw this buck. It was almost like I had seen a ghost. And I just was like, ah, oh my gosh, there's a buck. And I grabbed that rifle and just drew a bead on. All I could do is I was looking the opposite direction because I thought a buck would come from the other way. And when I turned over, he was just stepping out into this food plot. And, man, I just grabbed that rifle and drew a bead on him. And I didn't even count points. I was like, it's got antlers. And pulled the trigger, and he just dropped like a sack of potatoes.
Yeah.
And I felt very privileged to be able to harvest a great deer like that. A great set of antlers, but not just that, but a nice big bodied deer that I can pack in my freezer.
Picture,
I'm actually going to process him tonight after this recording of this.
He looked really, podcast. Really great. Fat.
I think it's probably a good 3.5-year-old Ozark Mountain buck.
Yeah. For where we live, it's a big buck.
Yeah. Yeah. Big bodied deer.
If you ever get That's into awesome. Miniature bear greases. Like not a full blown one, but like a little one,
like an actual media product.
No, like yeah, just
a
like
mini
a short
podcast.
One.
Yeah, okay, just like gotcha.
This isn't a full episode, but I'd be interested in knowing about the shift from points.
That's a heck of
to
a beer.
Scoring. Like, because when I was growing up, it was just like I shot a 10-point.
Yeah,
and now everyone's I shot a 1.4. You know,
yep.
And
it's just more complex math. It's just like a progression of human life. You start out like. What's a number? That's a one. That's a two.
Yeah.
That's a three. And then it goes to like finite math.
I didn't get past three, so.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. Yeah, my life would be easier if it was just points.
Yeah.
Like if I could just be like, Dad, I killed an 8-point. And you'd be like, oh, really? Good, son.
Yeah.
Now I got to be like, Dad, I killed 105-inch 8-point.
Again.
Well, congratulations,
well,
Josh.
Well, thank you very much.
That's excellent.
I'm excited to be able to hang some antlers on
that's
the
excellent.
Wall.
That's excellent.
Good you have it mounted, did you say?
Well, I'm just going to do a
Euro
mount.
Euro.
Yeah.
Freedom.
So let's, I want to, long hunters, man. What were you going to say, Isaac?
Oh, it's
Steve
not,
Rennell and I did an audio original is what we're calling it. Audio original.
It's, like y'all were the first people to talk.
It's kind of like an audio book, but better.
It's kind of like a book, but original.
Better.
You ain't got to read.
Better. It is different than a book, though. It's hard to put your finger on it, but it's not a book. It's an audio original.
I think it's in the making.
It
the way
didn't
you
have
made
a book.
It
had a script.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and we yeah. and we and the script was man, it is
and
so I really can't wait for the world to hear it. I think it's a
I'm
unique audio product that is going to give information. It's called Long Hunter 1761 to 1775. And basically there was a period of time for 14 years that was halted. It ended at the American Revolution and it started around 1761, where the European long hunters were trespassing into Indian and French and Spanish territory to contribute and to try to make a fortune in the deer hide trade, which they were sending deer hides back to Europe. Fascinating. I mean, like, blow your mind kind of fascinating. And we really, we didn't just follow along the standard tropes of what you might think about long hunters. I think the team did a great job of really showing the motivations of these guys and how destitute many of them were. I mean, these guys were essentially poachers in a lot of way, going in places they shouldn't be. And it wasn't because they were pumped about, they weren't sport hunting. They were just like trying to survive.
Trying to make a living.
Yeah. And they were that destitute. So it's you can pre-order it now. I've got a link. You can just
we'll
look
put it
up
in the description.
Yeah. But it comes out on January the 9th. And
two thoughts. One serious. When I hear you
Doubtful.
And Steve advertising this on the podcast, I don't know why, but I've just got, did you ever listen to Roy D. Mercer?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All I can hear is, how long a hunter are you?
Yeah.
And
is that
so
the
I feel
serious
like,
one or the funny one?
That's the serious, no. all I can say is I feel like it's a missed opportunity to advertise the book to not get him on.
R. D. Mercer?
About it. Yeah.
I think he died.
Well, missed
I'm
opportunity,
serious.
Like I said.
He could be riding Ken's reward.
The serious question is, did I understand right that this is the first in the Meat Eater American History series? I feel
yeah.
like they said something about that.
Yeah, yeah. So
that's
so
exciting.
It's if this goes well, and that's why we're like petitioning our people, to it'd be great if you supported this, if you feel like it's a contribution to society.
You have full control over whether or not this project moves forward.
I mean, it's just
forward.
True. That's the way yeah. media works, especially with these big publishers. Is if it does well, we'll do more. And we have plans, like running plans, to do some more that are really cool topics that I'm very interested in. So, yeah, Long Hunters, man. It's going to be good. And What I take away from it is it's the foundations of American deer hunting, which whitetail deer hunting is the most popular big game hunt in general, not just big game. The most popular hunting in America is whitetail deer hunting. There's more whitetail deer hunters. Most of us grew up whitetail deer hunting. And this is the foundations of why we love it, really. The cultural foundations was these guys. So that's it.
Montana Knife Company was founded by Josh Smith, one of the world's most experienced master bladesmiths. He's been making knives for 30 years, made in the USA and manufactured locally in Montana. The knives come with a multi-generational warranty and free sharpening. Designed, tested, and built by hunters, MKC is a hunting knife company first and foremost. They have the sharpest knives out of the box and the easiest knives to sharpen. And that is the dadgum truth. You better be careful with them when you get them. They are sharp. MKC is a fast-growing company. They just hired their 55th employee and are looking to hire about 50 more in the next year or so. I've carried a lot of these Montana knives, and the one that I like the most is their Speed Goat, which is a lightweight hunting knife, just the right size. MKC knives sell out within minutes of being released, so head over to MontanaKnifeCompany.com. They have new knives for sale every Thursday at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. So check their website and sign up for their text and email alerts. That is the best way to find out when they have knives available. Use code BEARGREASE10 for 10% off your first order. Montana Knife Company, working knives for working people. The old timers say that the turkeys start gobbling when the leaves are as big as squirrels' ears and the red buds start popping. And we're about there. And we are there in the South. The Onyx Hunt app is one of my most valuable tools in the spring woods. With tools like coniferous versus deciduous tree distribution layer, you can save time by locating edges or transition areas of mixing habitats from home. Find an area like this with water in close proximity, and more than likely, there will be a goblin turkey nearby. Knowing the exact boundaries of private ground ensures I stay on the right side of the fence, but can easily find public ground to go see if I can't strike a gobbler. If you do get one to sound off, using compass mode and waypoints will help you pinpoint his exact location. allowing you to move in and make the perfect setup to bring him right into your lap. Download the Onyx Hunt app today. You'll be glad you did. Onyx has a special offer for you. Use code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your membership at onyxmaps.com/hunt this spring. We've all seen plenty of gadgets and fads come and go, but here's one product that's stood the test of time, Seafoam Motor Treatment. Lots of hunters and anglers know that Seafoam helps engines run better and last longer. It's really simple. When you pour it in your gas tank, Seafoam cleans harmful fuel deposits that cause engine problems. I'm talking common stuff like hard starts, rough engine performance, or lost fuel economy. Seafoam is an easy way to prevent or overcome these problems. Just pour a can in your gas tank and let it clean your fuel system. You probably know someone who's used a can of Seafoam to get their truck or boat going again. People everywhere rely on Seafoam to keep their trucks, boats, and small engines running the way they should the entire season. Help your engine run better and last longer. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit seafoamworks.com to learn more.
Dad, I was going to ask you a question.
Go right ahead, brother.
Well, I guess I need to ask Misty a question first.
That'd be good.
Misty was not, you were not on the last render, and but you listened to the plot genesis story.
Yes.
So this is a two-part series. That's all it's going to be.
Yeah, the plot
there could
series.
Be, there could be a lot more, and there might be more in the future, but the first plot episode was about the plot genesis story. What did you think, Misty?
Well, so I actually talked to Clay about this after y'all had already done the render, but I had not had a chance to listen to the whole podcast yet. And as we were talking to it, one of the things that Clay said is there was this controversy, you know, about how the plots, did they come over on the ship because they weren't listed on the cargo?
Yeah.
What manifest.
Is it? Cargo manifest. Or, you know, did they get dogs here? And as he was telling me, he said one of two things could happen. And he tells me, one, you know, they could have, you know, been on the ship and not been on the manifest, or two. And I was like, wait, there's a third, because I thought he was going to say, or two, the dogs were on the manifest, but, or were on the ship, but were hidden. Like they snuck them on there.
Oh, yeah.
And I told him, if Tim the squirrel dog, if I was going from Germany or from, if I was traveling across the Atlantic,
yeah,
and they told me I couldn't bring my squirrel dog.
Yeah.
Tim would be on that ship.
Yeah.
Misty came in from listening to that, and she was like, those dogs were on that ship. They just didn't tell anybody.
I'm now imagining five plots in a trench coat. Yeah. You've like met my associate, rascals. George.
They're looking like the little rascals going to get a bank loan.
Yeah. Do you hear dogs barking? And she's like, no, that's that was Uncle, me. Yeah, I'm sorry. Pardon me.
We have plot hounds and we have, you know, the squirrel dogs. And the squirrel dogs, Tim, he knows when to be quiet. The plot hounds are not as gifted at that. Jedi, our retired plot hound, he loves the sound of his own voice.
What exactly did he retire from?
That's what I was wondering.
Well,
it's a very short career.
Activity.
It's a very accurate term for him. Yeah. I can explain more, but
yeah.
So,
but Jed loves the sound of his own voice, and
Jed would have had a hard time being smuggled over the Atlantic.
He would have been. Yeah, that's the only flaw in my logic. Yeah. Is Jedi at night in particular loves to just make melodic howls that are disconnected from anything happening.
No, Jedi's retired because his business partner is dead.
Yeah.
And it turned out Fern, he wasn't a great hunter.
Yeah.
Just a great companion.
He was Fern's hype girl.
Yeah.
Banjo player.
Exactly.
Basically. Yeah. Yeah.
He was JB for Fern.
Yeah. Exactly. No, I wanted to hear what you thought about that. You know, we didn't do this last time, but I want to do it. There's a lot of plot people that'll be listening to this. I want to go around the room and tell me if you think the dogs were on the ship. I mean, just like simple answer. Were they on the ship, or did George Plot develop the plot hound strain from dogs that were here? Because that's the question. Did they come from Germany? Did the stock come from Germany, or were there dogs on that ship? And you'd have to go back to listen to, I mean, we talked for an hour extensively about this idea. And really, the episode was about oral tradition versus written records. and I have a strong stance on it. It's like the written records of the 1750s.
Wait, are you going to tip your hand before we all?
No, no, I'm just going to paint the picture. Written records from the 1750s that we have today undoubtedly would be a dim record of reality. That's just a pill that everybody's going to have to swallow. Point number two, there are no records, written records, that we can put our hands on today of dogs coming from Germany. So it's like, it's just that simple. But, Dad, Gary Newcomb, what do you think? Were those dogs
on
that ship?
Well, you know, I went into some detail, which obviously no one listens to the old man.
That's not true.
Absolutely, they were on that ship.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that, and I went into detail saying that this was
You're the only one, so I'm getting
it. It was not an illiterate family. These people were intelligent people, could communicate very well.
Yeah.
And they told the story and passed it down. And if you just, I've forgotten some of their names, but, you know, George.
Johannes.
George, Henry.
Yeah, George,
Amos,
Henry.
John.
Henry lived in the house in 1803, and then you get up to Vaughn in the 60s. It wasn't that big of a deal for George to tell Henry. And Henry tell Monty, or, you know, it wasn't that big of a deal. And there was no reason to lie about it. You're not bragging about bringing dogs over. You just go, well, Uncle George brought those dogs over on the ship. I go with that absolutely, unequivocally.
Yeah. Okay.
They were on the ship.
Okay. There's believer. One. We got one believer, Josh.
My great-grandfather, John Leonardis, immigrated from Greece in 1915.
Mm.
Came through Ellis Island. I have been to Ellis Island and I have searched the records on the ship for the ship's manifest and cannot find his name. I know he immigrated from Greece. I know he came over on a ship. I'm 100%. They brought the dogs over. I have to believe they brought the dogs over.
There's two.
Wow.
My grandfather told me
That's
stories
a compelling...
of him coming over here and him being sent to Detroit.
I would like to commend the Landbridge for
a compelling intro.
Concise, definitive answer. That was good,
Josh. Brought
the
dogs over. They might not be on the manifest. Big deal. When was this?
The 1750s.
1750 something.
250 years ago.
Okay. Okay, I like it. I like it. We got two believers of six. Misty.
100% they're on the ship.
You're like, they smuggled those dogs over.
Well, even if they didn't smuggle them over, I think that it would, you know, these were people coming from Europe to the U.S. And I just think that maybe they valued the dogs. If they're saying they value the dogs, they valued the dogs. But maybe the people on the ship didn't value the dogs enough to write it down.
There
I mean, I think there's tons of reasons why they wouldn't be on a manifest.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, they probably also didn't say if they had mirrors or hairbrushes or things like that. I mean, whoever's on the ship is going to assign value to what gets recorded.
Mirrors and hairbrushes.
They could have been crying.
What if Johannes Plott brought two hairbrushes, one mirror,
three
four brindle
been
dogs.
Cryogenically frozen and put in a carry-on and reanimated when they got to the States. Nobody would have ever known.
Okay. Now,
that's three.
Okay, Isaac, you can't be influenced by what's been said.
I already have my answer.
What do you think? Were they on the ship?
They were on the ship for two reasons.
Okay.
One, like Gary said, there's no advantage to them lying. At the time that they were passing the story along, it's not like they were like snake oil salesmen going around the country trying to sell these.
And they weren't trying to start a breed.
Yeah. People were buying them, but it was because they were great dogs. There was no story necessary for that. Number two, it's a great story, and there's just absolutely no downside to believing it.
I can get behind that.
It doesn't matter at all.
Yeah.
Like, that's a way better story.
Yeah. It's just like, I am, in general, a fun guy, so I believe it.
Yeah.
I was not the daddy senior in Germany. He had a little wealth, didn't he?
Well, the oral tradition is that he worked for a wealthy guy.
He was a game guy.
So he would essentially be the estate manager of somebody that had some big chunk of ground in Germany. That was a common position. And that guy would have been in charge of dogs and would have been in charge of hunts and the grounds. And so that's
if you couldn't bring dogs with you, the owner of all that game that they were, you know, it would have been real easy to influence people to, hey, let the boy bring the dogs on the ship if that was a problem, which it probably was not a problem.
Well, I mean, it wasn't a big deal for dogs to come over from England. I mean, they did all the time. All right. I mean, I'm kind of shocked. We've got four so far of six that are believers. Brent.
100% they were not on that ship.
Whoa, what?
No. Ooh. Only if they started out with 500, maybe five survived, but he got a brother that dies. There's so how much food are they going to put on that ship? They got to feed them dogs. If his brother died because he was starving or whatever the issue was, them folks, they would eat them dogs before they ever got there.
Well, he didn't die because he was starving. Well, he died. We don't know why he died.
You don't know why
but
he died.
But not everybody died.
But what I'm saying is...
Scurvy. If you die on a ship, it's usually because of scurvy.
It's got to be scurvy.
Man, if he or just had some kiwis.
That could have made him walk the plank. Nobody knows. Mm. What I'm saying is them dogs wasn't on that ship.
Okay. So from the evidence that you heard in the...
There's no evidence that they were on the ship. That's the deal.
Right.
So, and I just don't... I don't think it was. I mean, it wasn't like going on a cruise is now. It was not
now,
easy.
Okay. I don't mean to throw possum in the hen house, as we say, but
Fox.
This is coming from a staunch, long-time generational Walker man.
Okay.
It would be to his benefit to tarnish
the
reputation, the story, the history, the legacy of the plot hound.
No, now you.
It would be to his advantage for people to be like, you know what?
Game in the
those
dog
plot
world.
Hounds don't mean anything to me.
No,
you know what?
That's
I'm
not
getting
true.
A Walker. I'm going to join the rest of America and get a Walker.
I wish they all had plots. I wish everybody had them. No, I'm kidding. That is not a stance or a platform that I'm willing to accept to stand on. No.
Okay.
That takes nothing away from how special that story is.
There you go.
Because there's two stories. There's a story they brought them over and the story that they didn't.
Yeah.
So, but I just believe it doesn't discount it. One, doesn't bring any discredit to what that family has done, what that
right,
lineage
exactly.
has done.
And but I think that's the reason that we can.
I like it better.
What about you, Clay?
I like it better. No, I ain't through yet, Josh. You killed a buck. You ain't running this.
You made your point, Brent. Move on.
I like the story better, having dogs from America doing it.
Mmm. American made.
Dad, gummit. Patriotism.
You have an agenda. You have an agenda you're working on.
That's
here.
A USA, baby.
To quote Bailey Reeves.
Exactly right.
Yeah, what's your stance, Clay?
Well, I find myself in a precarious situation here. I got an email from a dear friend of mine a few days ago, renowned historian. I don't think he would mind me bringing up his name. Dr. Brooks Blevins is a hero of the Bear Grease podcast.
Yep.
He is a prolific writer, academic, historian, based out of
Springfield, Missouri, the
Missouri
Queen
State.
City of the Ozarks.
Missouri State, the Queen City. Yeah. So Brooks is, this is the way I describe Brooks, as expert as anybody could be at their field, he is the expert of the Ozarks. I mean, like, you could take a rocket scientist from wherever and analyze their knowledge of their field, and it would, in anybody in the world, Brooks Blevins would be equivalent in his knowledge of the Ozarks.
He's bona fide.
He is bona fide. That is not relevant to this, but he is an academic and is a researcher. And he wrote me an email, and he said, Clay, really enjoyed the Plot Hound episode. He said, I never thought I would hear Palatinate of Germany mentioned. It's a region of Germany. I'm pronouncing it wrong.
That's easy
You're
for
doing
you
great.
To say.
And he said, but I've been around these narratives enough to know that when you go down the trail, some of these romantic stories usually aren't true. And he said, he doesn't think the dogs are on the ship.
Okay,
right here is where Phil needs to put in the what's that Law and Order
if show? If I had the banjo guy, I'd be like, hit it! Like, change the topic.
We should see if Myron Means is available.
Hey, man, hey, he was actually on my list, but Myron Means has too much to contribute.
Yeah.
It would be hard to ignore Myron. I want a banjo player I can ignore.
Yeah.
So check this out. If you were around me for more than 24 hours...
I like how we just changed the subject really quickly. Keep it going.
I quote one of three authors. Jose Ortega y Gasset, the most prolific Spanish language philosopher of the 20th century. He wrote Meditations on Hunting.
Yes.
Foundational.
You talk about him nonstop.
Nonstop. I asked Clay twice.
Please, he talks about him. Please stop.
I asked Clay twice in an 18-hour period if he'd read Meditations on Hunting. It just cycles through my brain. Wendell Berry, prolific theologian, poet, outdoor thinker,
Kentucky.
Insane. Brooks Blevins.
Yes. Those are the three guys we talk about.
Are you saying you're changing your side here?
I'm saying...
Because somebody said Brooks Blevins?
I hold him in the utmost esteem, and he is dead wrong.
Just me and my fellow sophisticate.
Mm-hmm.
It pains me to not be on the same team as Brent Reeves and
you
Brooks
still
Blevins,
didn't say what you think.
Well,
I don't think he wants to say what he thinks.
That's fair. He's the moderator. Put his feet in the fire.
I am not on the outside of this like all y'all are. I'm on the inside and in the family.
You're worried about your car getting blown up?
In the family.
If you're scared, say you're
scared. In the family, we keep things in the family.
Okay? Do y'all know that Clay will basically not sell a dog, a plot hound? Like my whole life, he'll be like, man, that dog is worth so much. But we'll never get a penny for it because he only gives them away to select people who he believes can pull the best out of the...
I'm a deep first generation plot man.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's how it gets started.
Okay. One day they'll talk about the Newcomb Farm plot hounds.
No, they won't.
We talked about
Jen's involved.
not if the retired one is the leading character.
We talk about them.
So this episode just reeks of so many bear greasy things that I'm interested in. And it was I told Misty, you told several people these stories, it might seem easy. This story was hard to tell in a way because it really was a personal story, a family story. And by easy, I don't mean like gathering the content was, I mean, yeah, there was challenges to that at different times, but just like handling someone's family story is more significant to me than like the outcome of like, did it do good or would people like it? My first concern is always the people that are opening themselves up.
Right.
And this is a story that's not been told. Like nobody regionally, Barry Tarleton is known and in the plot world, Barry Tarleton's known, but you know, there's not books about him or he's not a folk hero on a national level.
He is now.
And that's what I love about a story like this. And it's so, to me, cool to know that there are stories like this that are untold.
Yeah.
And, but Dad, general impressions of the Barry Tarleton story. What was your favorite part? What did you think about it?
Well, I can relate to being lazy. The guy offended me, I'm telling you.
when Tracy said that.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Golf's
hey, it was awesome. It was just really unbelievable to me, the way that it was woven together. And, you know, you had dogs, you had people, I love the movie Walking Tall. Uh-huh. Y'all remember that? The big stick. The
Buford
guy
Pusser.
Cleaned up.
Buford Pusser.
Yeah. Yeah. He cleaned up the county in Tennessee. That sounds like the same guy to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the old movie and the song White Lightning.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, man, that was just my favorite. Robert Mitchum running moonshine and hit that electrical deal and blew, you know. So the intrigue of the outlaws, the shootouts, the boys hitting the ditch, you know, afraid they're going to get shot. I enjoyed that more than the dogs. But the dog part was really awesome, too. I thought it was first
class. Tracy did a phenomenal job and of anybody on planet Earth, he would be as qualified as anyone to talk about this when he said, like, yeah, you and me are kind of intrigued by the pizzazz of, you know,
Tommy gun bailing out on the other side. No, I mean, doubt. I'm thinking Bonnie and Clyde, they couldn't get out of the car in time. This guy, he got out in time to, he shut down some boys with Tommy guns,
yeah,
with
yeah.
a shotgun.
Well, okay, and so, you know, it's fun to talk about that, but if it was me who had been out on the street today and had been shot at and had returned fire and came home and told my wife that, like, literally could have been killed. I mean, it's a different story when it's real. And to me, that's what, and I'd never met Barry Tarleton. I know Tracy, I know Ben, I know a lot of people that were around him. I watched an extensive interview that, you know, that interview, I picked five, like, 30-second clips of that Barry Tarleton interview. There's a full interview with him. As you realize, and like Tracy said, like, it was a terrible thing. He wasn't doing it for fame. He wasn't doing it because so they make a TV show about him. That it wasn't like Moonshiners, you know, on Channel 12, Barry Tarleton. And Barry's like twirling his pistol and shooting people. He literally, his brothers were murdered and he was angry at them. I mean, and so there was not a Hollywood shine on it. I mean, this is a man that came from such poverty that they were fattening possums to eat it. And he is in the midst of really the American dream of financial increase over time at a time when America was kind of blossoming. And here he is, and he's on this kind of upward trajectory from abject poverty to having a good job and having a car and being able to provide for his family. But then there's this thing that's in his community that's killing people. And he's like, no. This is getting in the way of this life that I want for my children, for my family. And it was ugly, you know, and I think Tracy did a good job of de-romanticizing it, you know, and just saying, oh, the moonshine was terrible. You know, it really wrecked a lot of people. But that's what was so intriguing.
He was, to me, a real hero. And so many of y'all, not me, have this little hero guy and girl inside you that never really has an opportunity to come forth. Sergeant York, just an old farmer, World War One, and then who's the guy in World War Two?
Audie Murphy.
I mean, these guys, they were just little guys, but when they were put under pressure, they were tremendous heroes. And he was a tremendous hero. I mean, he went into his community and said, hey, I'm going to clean this mess up.
Yeah.
And he could have been killed. And then he loved bear hunting. I mean, to the point where he was wild-eyed. So I just thought he was an awesome, awesome guy. And I put him right up there with the heroes of our country.
Yeah.
Can you imagine working a shift at the milk plant with that guy? What'd you do last night? Oh, I caught the radio program. What about you? Well, and he wouldn't have been braggadocious about it. I imagine just totally deadpan. Got shot up by some Tommy guns, and I shot one of them with a shotgun. After that, I went bear hunting.
I bet you one thing.
Ben Hazel had dinner ready.
I bet nobody messed with his lunch in the ice box.
You know, whenever I look at pictures of my kids from the past year or even just a few months ago, I'm so amazed at how fast they're growing up, and then it hits me hard. I'm getting older too. That's why planning for my family's financial security has become a top priority. Making sure we're prepared and having enough life insurance in case something unexpected happens and I'm out of the picture is crucial. And Fabric by Gerber Life makes it simple to get the protection that's right for your family. Fabric by Gerber Life was designed by parents and for parents to help you get a high quality, surprisingly affordable term life insurance policy in less than 10 minutes. You could go from start to covered in less than 10 minutes with no health exam required. There's no risk to apply. They have a 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can cancel at any time. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meet.com. meetfabric.com/bear. That's M-E-E-T, fabric.com/bear, meetfabric.com/bear. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Assurance Company, not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions. Montana Knife Company was founded by Josh Smith, one of the world's most experienced master bladesmiths. He's been making knives for 30 years, made in the USA and manufactured locally in Montana. The knives come with a multi-generational warranty and free sharpening. Designed, tested, and built by hunters, MKC is a hunting knife company first and foremost. They have the sharpest knives out of the box and the easiest knives to sharpen. And that is the dadgum truth. You better be careful with them when you get them. They are sharp. MKC is a fast-growing company. They just hired their 55th employee and are looking to hire about 50 more in the next year or so. I've carried a lot of these Montana knives, and the one that I like the most is their Speed Goat, which is a lightweight hunting knife, just the right size. MKC knives sell out within minutes of being released, so head over to MontanaKnifeCompany.com. They have new knives for sale every Thursday at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. So check their website and sign up for their text and email alerts. That is the best way to find out when they have knives available. Use code BEARGREASE10 for 10% off your first order. Montana Knife Company, working knives for working people. The old timers say that the turkeys start gobbling when the leaves are as big as squirrels' ears and the red buds start popping. And we're about there. And we are there in the South. The Onyx Hunt app is one of my most valuable tools in the spring woods. With tools like coniferous versus deciduous tree distribution layer, you can save time by locating edges or transition areas of mixing habitats from home. Find an area like this with water in close proximity, and more than likely, there will be a goblin turkey nearby. Knowing the exact boundaries of private ground ensures I stay on the right side of the fence, but can easily find public ground to go see if I can't strike a gobbler. If you do get one to sound off, using compass mode and waypoints will help you pinpoint his exact location, allowing you to move in and make the perfect setup to bring him right into your lap. Download the Onyx Hunt app today. You'll be glad you did. Onyx has a special offer for you. Use code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt this spring.
Hey, before you go too far, I want to hear what Misty says about women. I tell you, I've got some strong thoughts about Hazel. I'm just...
Yeah, me too.
I've been looking for that Hazel woman.
I think I have a Hazel, to be honest with you.
I think you do too.
Yeah.
And,
Clay was just saying that he was a little concerned at how people might take that part of the story. And I had just listened to it, and we were just eating.
So there's a part on the podcast where Tracy describes the routine of his grandfather, which was so good. Like, it was, I mean, I like it. I commend people for paying attention to stuff and being able to, like, could I describe the routine of Lewin Newcomb, my grandfather? I mean, no. I mean, I have some ideas of the way he lived his life, but anyway, I thought it was really neat the way he just had all that laid out and described. But it certainly, and Tracy,
he said it.
He said, you might hear that story and think that this is this poor little woman being run over by some overbearing. And I mean, he was just like,
she's the hero in the story, in my opinion.
Let me tell you, my grandmother and great grandmother were like that, and it was their schedule, not my grandfather or my great grandfather's schedule. It was their schedule.
Mm.
They were doing that.
Yeah, if you want warm food, you better be here.
Yeah, you be here.
It reminds me of the story of the gentleman you worked with
Mr. Leon.
Knocked him out with the
Mr. Leon.
Over the eggs,
same way.
Yeah. Tell me what you said.
Yeah, so Clay was just saying that he was concerned. I was like, man, if people hear that in any way, that kind of setup is actually, and if you look historically at, and people could argue with this, and people will, and I don't really care, but that type of marriage actually does have quite a bit of equality inside of it.
Absolutely.
They have different roles. They're not thinking about. He's working a shift. He's coming home working a job. She's managing the homestead. What she is doing is not paid, is not compensated work, but it is tremendously valuable to the home.
Vital. Absolutely.
And if you look at Appalachian history, you see that, you hear that inside of the stories that they tell about the women who built these homesteads. Number one, they're tough. They can work pretty hard. What they're doing is actually to keep those homes running. And if you look at like hunter-gatherer societies, and there's imperfections and there's big issues, like the way women have been treated for eons of generations, there's big issues, but there is inside of a high-functioning home a level of egalitarian relationships that exist. And that's just her role. They're just surviving. That is just like, she's going to take care of the home stuff. He's going to go out to the factory and work. They're going to bring, he's going to go get meat from elsewhere. It's only like since agriculture and society has shifted towards a more, it was in the like agrarian cultures that things, certain things became more valuable than
and
other
what,
things.
What you said was that in going way back, the hunter-gatherer societies, the women often had more rights or more rights than even women would today. Am I hearing you say that right?
Well, I didn't say that. I said in hunter-gatherer societies, there was more equality inside of inside of the structure to the, well, I mean, they could, I wouldn't say it in the terms of rights, but there was more equality inside of the structure of the home because each played a part and those parts were very valuable.
Yeah.
And so those were, the relationship was actually a very mutually beneficial. And as we became more agrarian, that's where that started to shift.
Yeah. And one thing that I said, as I was trying to, again, I'm wanting to tell this story accurately and not wanting, because you're just getting such little snippets. Like, I mean, we did a whole hour and 4 minutes on this guy, and it's like, we didn't get the whole story.
Right.
You know, I mean, we got parts of it. But the opening scene of the podcast, which I loved, was me eavesdropping on a phone call between Tracy, his aunt, and Tracy's mother. And in the story of the car getting blown up, what was Barry Tarleton doing when the car got blown up?
Heating up a bottle.
He was heating up a baby bottle.
That stood out to me.
3:30 or 4 in the morning?
Yeah.
I mean, it's
he
like...
He was getting ready for work, too.
Right. Yeah. He's getting ready for work, and she told him he was going to go scold the dogs, because the dogs were going crazy, his bear dogs. And she said, don't worry about those dogs. Heat up that youngin's bottle. I mean, she, you know what I mean? You kind of get these little peaks.
Yep.
She wasn't some lady that got all beat up. She loved him. And they really did. And then I wanted to include the story of him talking about meeting her. I mean, this is an 84-year-old man. They've been married for 63 years. There's a lot of outcomes of a marriage that long. If you said, how'd you meet your wife? I mean, I don't know. Barry told it passionately. Like, I just could tell he liked that story.
That's what I was going to say. A marriage of 63 years with a setup like that does not last without mutual respect and adoration and all those things. It's not one that is built on domination.
You know, I this day and time, people don't believe the way I believe. But that is an important part of our society. I mean, I'm bigger and stronger than Hazel. I can go out and haul logs. I can bring money in. Your job is really more important. You raise the kids. I mean, she's got her imprint on little kids every day. She's taking care of them. She's. I mean, it's a bigger job. Yeah. The job of the man back then was probably easier. It's if this offends you, you need to do a little research.
Yeah.
You need to do a little thinking, because this was a beautiful relationship. She loved doing it. He needed it done for him so he could put all of his energy.
Yeah, they were a team.
Into the pet milk plant.
Yep. And you know, busting those moonshots.
And bring it quarter an hour home.
Yeah.
And he needed a co-pilot to drive the moonshine back.
Yeah.
To me, the women are the big heroes of the world, period.
Yeah.
And just because they love taking care of a husband, children, there's nothing.
That's noble.
That's honorable.
That's noble.
That's honorable.
Yeah.
Now, our world has changed. It started changing in the 50s where women went to work. Now then, all of a sudden, you know, we share in these duties. And a lot of times the women are more gifted than the men, and they can move up and bring more money home, like Misty does over
and that's what
play.
You do now. You stay home while your wife goes
Hazel's
to work.
Hazel's working and I'm out playing golf. So.
I think the system, the economic systems have changed a lot as well. I mean, the like if you think about what was required to put food on the table at that time. I mean,
yeah.
If we're going to like grind wheat we to put food on the table and have sourdough and smoke, if they're going to kill a bear that you smoke for so that the kids can eat in the wintertime, that's a lot of work that you can't do that has to be done during daylight hours because you also don't even have running water. And I mean, they were talking about not having a toilet in the house. So that stuff has to be done.
That was that you're mixing.
I'm
the
mixing two
stories.
Podcasts.
Yeah, that
okay.
was that
it's
was
one big story.
Hazel, yeah. Hazel and Barry were a little further in time.
Okay,
than that.
Okay, okay. But still, I'm just saying, like
it
you've
was John Plott who wouldn't go to the bathroom in the house he lived
that's
in.
That's right. That's right.
Which actually is very reasonable.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you imagine you a caveman? Like and it's like caveman's in your house. He's like, hey. I need to go, like, number two. And he's like, that little room? Jack. You want me to go in the house?
It's true, yeah. I hadn't thought of it like that till the podcast. But my point being, like, it's an economic... I mean, there's a massive economic contribution that she's making to the house by having yeah. all that stuff done. Yeah. I think that people don't realize, with convenience food, with the way that we live now, some of those things are removed. But yeah. And there were societal constraints on women, sure. But I just think that in a house like that where it is a team, we're not looking at who's got to do
thought,
what.
I thought Tracy, it was cool. When you're talking to Tracy, there's always this little side, just side philosophies or ideas that he talked about. I mean, like him saying that she only went to town once a week and wouldn't go out without her makeup. And he said, yeah. You know, today country means you dress down. He said, back in the day, the mountain people I was around, they dressed up to go out. Like, they were interested in putting on their best.
Yeah.
And then to move it a little further along, we actually talked and had this, like, big section about kind of, like, modern economics around land.
Yeah.
And I had to condense it, like, way down.
I thought that
down.
Part was super interesting as well.
Because he said Barry's mom and dad were would have been, like, dirt poor people who, well, let's move it to Barry. Barry worked for 25 cents an hour at a milk plant and was able to buy a relatively sizable farm.
Yeah.
By the time Tracy's father, who we didn't bring up on the podcast, but, you know, Barry's son was Tracy's father, he had to work a job in town to and run a farm.
Yep.
By the time Tracy now, basically the farm is not producing money. You got to have a job to even have a farm. And then his son will struggle with the wages. You either have to inherit a farm or with the wages that are paid to the average person. And I mean, I think this is not just East Tennessee. It'd be much of the world.
Yeah.
You are not going to just work a normal job as a plumber or as an insurance agent or whatever, and be able to probably go buy a big farm without some kind of external help. And anyway, what happened in Europe is happening here. And it's just the economics of a civilized, like we came into the settlement of America is so unique to the world. I mean, in recorded history, there has never been a big spot on a map that was just settled this quickly. And obviously there's a lot of problems with, you know, I mean, this place was a grand civilization of the Native American tribes.
Yeah, like 10,000.
Europeans got here and they were like, wilderness. And the Native Americans were like, no,
wrong.
Great civilization.
We've been carefully managing this place for a while
so,
now.
So, you know, there's all that. But the expansion of America, it's like, The people that were most destitute, yeah. like the long hunters, they were the ones going to the edge of the frontier. And all those people that were settling in East Tennessee on that rough mountain land, they were poor people. People didn't want that land.
Right.
And now the economics of the country has grown so much. Land is so valuable. There's so many people wanting to come here that rough land that is not valuable for agriculture is now worth a ton of money. Anyway, it's what happened in Europe. It's happening here.
My grandmother.
There's nothing we can do about it. It's not like bad or good.
Right.
It's just the way it is.
My grandmother told me that her grandpa, when in that area where we're, I'm from down there, he said a gallon of whiskey and an acre of land cost a dollar each.
Oh, my goodness.
And wow. If her father, her grandfather, had spent all the money he spent on whiskey on land, they
would be millionaires.
They would have named that county after us. We'd owned it all. Mm. So, I mean, that was, I mean, you think about that.
Yeah.
An acre of land, that's with timber on it, a dollar?
Yeah.
So, I mean,
every generation
has. Hey, pull your mic now.
Every generation has those stories.
Yeah.
And there's stuff out there today that will be told 50 years that old Gary Newcomb, if he had just done this.
Paid $10,000 an acre for that land.
Yeah. Well, it's even
more simple
that's
than
a
that.
Great, that's a great point, because one day we will, should the earth persist, which I'm not sure that it will, they'll talk about us like we're talking about Barry Tarleton.
Sure.
Yep.
And, I mean, I've got stories about Dad when we first.
I got to shoot when Brent's we were little kids.
You know, you could have bought 180 acres for $500 an acre. In Western Arkansas, in a primary, and I mean, like $90,000, we could have had 180 acres, which today that land is worth who knows what.
10 times that.
I mean, and it's like, doggone it, if we'd have just bought it. I mean, yeah, there's always this economic thing going on. And at the time, it's always expensive.
Yep.
Like at the time, that was too much money for Gary Newcomb. Now it's like, shoot, man. 90 grand for 180 prime acres, like, we'll figure out a way to do that.
And it doesn't necessarily, in the future, when they look back, it probably will be land, but it could be something totally different. You know, we all talk about being from Arkansas, if we'd have bought Walmart stock, Dillard stock, Tyson
Coca-Cola
stock, you know.
Pine knots. It's going to be pine knots.
Who knows what it is, but we're overlooking something today.
Pine knots.
That's a good point.
Ken's reward.
Yeah.
We could have bought.
Buck and quarter horse.
This is also interesting. Isaac, favorite part?
I thought that when, was it Ben? Is that generation
Ben Jones.
Four? When he was talking about the basically inheritance of his family and his dogs, and you guys were talking about like how fragile that is.
Yeah.
That was fascinating to me. It's like, if you inherited $1 million that was surrounded by dynamite and there was a faulty wire in there sparking, you're just like one small incident away from losing all of it. Like if you get your bloodline broken, like there it goes. Yeah. But like the whole point of having it is putting it in a dangerous situation. That was super fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Like, 'cause you think about all of this history that goes into this line of dogs. And then to think, like, the whole point is putting them up against bears.
Yeah.
Just kind of blew my mind a
little
bit.
Well, when I was standing there with Ben, and I don't know.
How old is Ben?
Ben's 29.
29.
Okay. I'm going to come back to Ben. I'm standing there with all his dogs in this. You remember when I, on the first episode, said that somebody might bypass in Appalachia. A backyard or a little watered hollow is what I said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where they've got the dogs tethered and can come down to get water. Dark brindle dogs going up a hollow. Man, there is nothing more. If you know when you see that, you're like, this is special. It's what Roy Clark's house looks like. If you went to Roy Clark's house, you could send 100 Americans up his road and it'd be interesting to see what they would say, because most of them would not see they just wouldn't know. They would see something different to those of us on the inside.
They'd be ignorant of how beautiful it is.
Well, and I'm standing out in Ben's, back with Ben and Tracy's dogs. And I don't know, let's just say there's 25 dogs there. And it's like, that's all of them. And now, granted, I wanted to say this. They have close friends that run Houston Valley Dogs. I mean, it takes more than, that's not enough.
Yeah.
That's not enough. But there's not. I don't know this, so I can say it without like getting in their business. I bet there's not five guys that they're super close with that they breed back and forth.
Yeah.
Three or four, maybe. But there would also be some historical things that happened years ago. Like, you know, maybe 20 years ago, Barry gave somebody a dog that they kind of still have some of that blood that's kind of disconnected. Yeah. So, you know, there's some of it, but like the core of the Houston Valley strain of plots is sitting right there in front of us.
Yeah.
And those dogs are getting hunted like crazy. And, yeah, it's
and they're long legged, small boned with short ears.
Yeah.
Yep.
He said a short body, longer legs, short ears,
and small
almost,
body.
Almost, yeah. Yeah. Almost yeah. black, just enough brindle
to register.
Now,
that was great.
Our buddy, that's the same way, Roy. I recorded Roy Clark describing to me the color that he liked in a bear dog. And the way Roy Clark says it is he says, Clay? I can't do my Roy Clark. I've got a great, Mr. Roy, if you hear this, you know how much I love you. I have a great Roy Clark impression. I'm not sure I can do it right now. But he says, I like them when 20 feet away from them, you think they're jet black. But when you're right up on them, you can see just enough brindle to register them. He basically said the same thing Ben said.
Yeah.
Now, there's some people that don't like that. I'm pretty sure. I don't want to name any names. There's a sect of plot people that do not like the black ones because historically the dogs were a little more brindle, and there was some controversy over the registration of allowing buckskin plots to be registered. Buckskin plots can be look like a yellow lab. I mean, you'd see Roy has one. He's got all these black dogs, and then there's a yellow lab sitting there. And you're like, what is that? And he's like, it's a plot. Where'd you get it?
There's no you. And you turn them anyway in the sun, you can't see any brindle at all.
Man, the ones that I've seen, I'm telling you, you'd put them on a stand in flooded timber in Arkansas and expect them to retreat a duck.
When he was saying that,
they may kill me for that.
If
I die, it's because I said that.
There's so many reasons for you to die these days.
Well, but point being, the buckskin used to be like this deep traditional. They were special because you'd have just every five generations, you'd have one that would be buckskin.
That's my question. When he said, clarify for me when he said register, is he talking about register in UKC or is he talking about register that you can actually see?
No, UKC. They can't be jet black. If you have a dog,
the yellow one?
Well, okay.
That's
only in the last 2 years have they allowed buckskin plots to be registered.
Nice.
It was a major controversy. Major controversy.
So they're DNA
because
in them dogs.
What happened was is there became and now here we go again. If I die, it's because they killed me.
It's like Jimmy Hoffa over
that's
here.
Enough, man.
What happened was is that brindle bear dogs, a prized plot hound was a buckskin plot. And they accused some guys of breeding in red bones to get buckskin plots.
Uh-oh.
And so these breeders would be like, heck, you just breed that dog with a red bone, and you'll get all the buckskin plots you want and be able to sell those for good money. $1. So people were accusing people of doing stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because you could quickly get a buckskinish dog by putting in something red or lighter colored.
Yeah.
And so that's when some of the guys were like, no buckskins, but buckskins were clearly traditionally inside the breed. And I have talked to many of prominent plot breeders, and I didn't ask Tracy. Tracy probably be listening to this. I would like to know if Houston Valley has ever thrown a buckskin plot.
Well, two of the original five were supposed to be yellow dogs, wasn't
two right. of them?
Of the original five that were definitely on that ship.
100%.
If this were a mule, what would be considered the flashy variety?
Oh, the flashy is the Maltese and buckskin.
Yeah.
Now, Roy
What's
Clark,
a Maltese?
I don't want to put words
in.
This is all real serious stuff. So.
This is pretty technical. I think we're in the weeds.
Oh, dude, this is where the meat of this bone is at. Roy Clark has had a few Maltese plots. His dogs are just like almost jet black, and they'll pump out a Maltese plot every now and then.
What does that mean?
A gray undercoat with black stripes.
It looks kind of like a Catahoula.
They're really neat dogs. Very hard to come by. So, Brent. Yeah, well, okay, if Miss Newcomb thinks we're in the weeds,
she's probably
right.
We are.
She normally is.
I don't think being in the weeds is wrong.
Not always.
Montana Knife Company was founded by Josh Smith, one of the world's most experienced master bladesmiths. He's been making knives for 30 years, made in the USA and manufactured locally in Montana. The knives come with a multi-generational warranty and free sharpening. Designed, tested, and built by hunters, MKC is a hunting knife company first and foremost. They have the sharpest knives out of the box and the easiest knives to sharpen. And that is the dadgum truth. You better be careful with them when you get them. They are sharp. MKC is a fast-growing company. They just hired their 55th employee and are looking to hire about 50 more in the next year or so. I've carried a lot of these Montana knives, and the one that I like the most is their Speed Goat, which is a lightweight hunting knife, just the right size. MKC knives sell out within minutes of being released. So head over to MontanaKnifeCompany.com. They have new knives for sale every Thursday at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. So check their website and sign up for their text and email alerts. That is the best way to find out when they have knives available. Use code BEARGREASE10 for 10% off your first order. Montana Knife Company, working knives for working people. The old timers say that the turkeys start gobbling when the leaves are as big as squirrels' ears and the red buds start popping. And we're about there. And we are there in the South. The Onyx Hunt app is one of my most valuable tools in the spring woods. With tools like coniferous versus deciduous tree distribution layer, you can save time by locating edges or transition areas of mixing habitats from home. Find an area like this with water in close proximity, and more than likely, there will be a gobbling turkey nearby. Knowing the exact boundaries of private ground ensures I stay on the right side of the fence, but can easily find public ground to go see if I can't strike a gobbler. If you do get one to sound off, using compass mode and waypoints will help you pinpoint his exact location, allowing you to move in and make the perfect setup to bring him right into your lap. Download the Onyx Hunt app today. You'll be glad you did. Onyx has a special offer for you. Use code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt this spring. We've all seen plenty of gadgets and fads come and go, but here's one product that's stood the test of time: Seafoam Motor Treatment. Lots of hunters and anglers know that Seafoam helps engines run better and last longer. It's really simple. When you pour it in your gas tank, Seafoam cleans harmful fuel deposits that cause engine problems. I'm talking common stuff like hard starts, rough engine performance, or lost fuel economy. Seafoam is an easy way to prevent or overcome these problems. Just pour a can in your gas tank and let it clean your fuel system. You probably know someone who's used a can of Seafoam to get their truck or boat going again. People everywhere rely on Seafoam to keep their trucks, boats, and small engines running the way they should the entire season. Help your engine run better and last longer. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit seafoamworks.com to learn more.
Brent, just Sir. Favorite part of the podcast?
Oh,
or
favorite
just analysis,
part,
you know?
Talking about... God, man, it was good. I told you before we started, this episode may surpass anything that we've ever done, or you've ever done, that we've ever listened to or talked about. It's it's absolutely wonderful. Identified a lot with his hatred for moonshine, because my moonshine steals were meth labs.
Yeah.
I felt the same way. So I think that part, I'm not comparing myself to him by any means. I'm just saying that I know where he was coming from on that.
Yeah.
I thought an interesting nuance that they introduced was he was like, it's basically depicted as a binary scenario where you're either a moonshiner and you're of the people, or you're a revenuer and you're whatever. He's like, he didn't care about the taxes.
Yeah.
He cared about what it was doing to his community, which was, I thought, an interesting, nuanced view. Yeah.
You know, I'd never... Well, I have heard that analogy before about that, you know, moonshine is today's like meth. And then here we are like glorifying moonshiners, you know, in 50 years will they glorify the meth addicts, you know. But
helpful.
Brent, 50 years from now, I'm going to make a Bear Grease about you.
What are you even talking about?
Brent busting the meth heads.
That'd be good. I'd listen to that one.
Yeah. Carry on, Brent. Carry on. That was just the start. That was just an opening comment from
Brent. I don't want to.
Why was it the best? He told me that beforehand. He said, "Clay, this may have been the best Bear Grease
that may I've ever that, listened to." I liked the when he talked about the routine that he had. It reminded me so much of my grandparents. And then we said it a while ago, not to ad nauseum, you know, that my grandpa wasn't bossing my grandmother around. It was, if he wanted warm food, it was be there then.
Mm-hmm.
And when he got up, take his bath, all that stuff, because she had stuff to do. You know, she got up before him in the morning, got him off to the farm, and then she worked there at the house, and then she went to the store that they owned, and she worked that.
Mm-hmm.
And then she come home, and then she fix supper, and he come in, and it's that whole yeah. scenario. My grandmother was the linchpin that held the whole family together.
Mm-hmm.
She was running the whole show, and my grandfather went to his grave saying she was the boss.
Mm.
You know,
hey, Hazel was the boss. I think
there ain't no doubt about it.
She didn't get up and cook; she put the cereal out at night. And Sonny, if you don't like it, go find another wife.
Eat your cereal and warm that bottle up.
And warm that bottle up, baby.
Yeah. So that's
a good point.
I identify with the whole, and I'm sure a lot of people do, you know, identify with that, with their grandparents, with that era of. So that was, I love all the dog stuff. I mean, you know, I'm crazy about hunting dogs. But to me, that the family aspect of that and his role in trying to make his community better.
Yeah.
I really identify with that. So that was my favorite part.
Yeah.
I appreciated that he was like, I'm going to get revenge. I can do it the legal way or the illegal way.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Like, he chose the legal way.
Yeah. I was surprised when Tracy used that word revenge.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, he was just quoting his grandpa. He's like, he's like, that's what he said to me. Like, I can't sugarcoat this thing. He said, I want revenge. Which is just interesting. And I was amazed at the, you know, you might hear a story about somebody moonshining or something, and when you actually go dig into it, you realize there's not a whole lot there. I mean, you know, like we have a moonshine story in our family of my grandfather, my mother's father, who went to some type of juvenile jail before he was 18 for being involved in the transportation of illegal moonshine.
We talked about that.
Yeah. And it's like, you dig into it and that's about all there is. Like he apparently didn't stay doing that, or at least didn't get caught and that, yada, yada. I had heard these stories about Barry from Tracy and others. And it's just like, yeah, Barry was a big, really involved in busting moonshine. And this story, when you dig into it, it just went deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And I didn't touch the surface of it.
Yeah.
I really didn't. That's what Tracy told me today. I communicated a little bit with him. And he said it was, you know, really enjoyed it. The family enjoyed it. And he said, we really didn't touch the surface of really who Barry Tarleton was. And I believe it. And even the stories. So in the interview that Bob Plott did, and I got a lot of thanks to Bob Plott for just being there. But then Tracy filmed it.
Bob Plott did the interview with Barry Tarleton.
Bob Plott was talking to Barry Tarleton. Mm-hmm. And you didn't hear Bob's voice on it, but I wanted to give Bob credit for just being there to interview Barry months mm-hmm. before he died. And Barry, it was late in his life, and you know, you could tell like his world was kind of closing in a little bit because he just wasn't that elaborate. It was unreal, the stories. I mean, like him saying, they were like, did you bust some moonshine steals? And he was like, yeah. One time I busted a big steal, 1,000 gallons. And he told the whole story of how he busted
That's
it.
A big steal.
He said they snuck into this moonshine steal, and I just couldn't include it. It was just too long. He snuck into this moonshine steal, him and another guy, you know, two law enforcement officers armed, and they're trying to just get in there to get their eyes on it and maybe catch the guys. And on the way in, they run into two boys, young boys, and Barry calls them over and says, "Don't you tell anybody you saw us here." He gave both the boys $5 each and told them, "Don't you tell anybody that you saw us here." Apparently, they were right behind somebody's house because he said the two boys left with the $5, and he heard them go down to their house and yell for their mama, "Mama, there's two guys on the hill." And he said he could hear them tell their mom that they just saw the law.
Yeah.
And he talked about like circling around the mountain and then running into the adults that were in charge of the moonshine still. And he knew them. They were just people that he knew. It's just like Bill, and they didn't put up a fight. Like it wasn't a shootout. It was just, like, "Gotcha, Bill. Yep. We're going to take this still." And
kinda like
Otis. And then, so they arrest them without tussle. They arrest these guys. And then, but one of the guys they arrested was a young guy, like probably 20 years old. That's the impression I got, who was wanted for murder that they'd been trying to catch. This kid had killed a man with a set of pliers.
For 78 cents?
Like he was trying to rob him, basically. And he had 78, somehow they knew it was for 78 cents. And I don't think the kid meant to kill him, but he killed him with a pair of pliers. And hauled him off way deep in the mountains down in a holla and dumped the body. And Barry got the guy in a room, an interrogation room, and was just like, "You killed that guy, didn't you?" And basically the guy confessed to killing him, and he said, "Where's the body?" And he told Barry right where the body was. Barry got in his car, drove 20 miles out into the mountains, walked down in this deep holla, and found the body. They hauled it out. I mean, that was just one like story that just sparked in his mind. Like, and then, you know, the Tommy gun story, it's like what you heard was all that he told. But it's like, wait a minute, where were you?
Yeah.
How did
it resolve?
Who had a Tommy gun and was shooting your car?
Any one of these stories you would have a hard time telling in an hour and 4 minute podcast, much less a lifetime, 84 years or 82 years of these stories, seemingly all the time.
I mean, just the amount of shootouts and killing that was going on back in those times was just unbelievable. And there, he also, in part of the interview that I just couldn't put in there, Barry said that the law didn't come back in the Houston Valley very often. That's why he wanted to be constable, is because the sheriff.
It's like Dodge City, man.
He said the law, it was just too far back. They just didn't come out there. And so he had to kind of take it into his own hands.
And everybody didn't have an iPhone to take pictures of videos of what was going on. He had a little free run. Hey, one thing before you quit, and we can answer this afterwards, but I was intrigued by these dogs in that they weren't fighting dogs. You know, if you just asked me, I'd go, "Man, give me a stinking pit bull and a Great Dane. You know, give me some big old dog." They're not worried about that. Apparently it was running dogs is what they wanted.
Yeah.
Once they got to the bear, I mean, they're a little old long-legged, short-eared dog's not going to be whipping no bear.
Well, okay.
A pack of them could, maybe. But
well, that's the thing, is they're not trying to overpower a bear.
Yeah.
They've got a bear. A black bear is the hardest big-game animal in North America to tree. More than a mountain lion, more than a coon, more than a fox, more than a whatever. A bear dog, I have heard it said, and I'm going to say it just because it's a compelling thought, even though someone might argue about it. They have to be the most athletic dog in the world.
Yeah.
Like there's not, I mean, more than any working dog, a bear dog has to have a unique set of characteristics. Got to have an incredible nose to be able to track. Got to have the nerve, as Roy Clark and the Laurel Mountain Bear Hunters say. They got to be nervy. That's a big thing, is that you turn Tim loose on a black bear and he gets swatted one time and he's like, "Bros, I'll be treating squirrels. I'll just keep treating squirrels." 98% of dogs on planet Earth, 99.9 probably, encounter a bear. They finally catch one and they're like, "Holy cow, I had no idea that you were big and hairy and mean and could kill me." A bear dog's got to have the right amount of want to catch you, but not get killed. Because if they just run in and grab hold of a bear, they're going to die.
Yeah.
They got to have incredible athleticism. So, I mean, like, they're not breeding for some big, like a dog to run in and catch a bear. He's got to be able to travel miles and miles through mountains.
The other side of my question is, if you went around the country and asked a different type hound man, you know, plot man, what do you describe in your dog? You know, Ben said long legs, small body, short ears. This other guy, what's he going to say? I mean, you know, so apparently there's a lot of, he used a word like style of dog.
Sure, sure.
That's the way in just about in every breed. You know, I know my buddy Rex, he likes a 45-pound walker dog and a female to coon hunt. I know boys that like, don't bring it to the house unless it's going to be over 70 pounds, you know.
Just personal preference. Just,
every breed, you know, labs are like that. Yeah. Guys like a small female a lot of times to retrieve ducks, but anyway, one wants a big.
Now, what Tracy said though was, he said in these mountains here, serious plot men, if they never spoke to each other, didn't know each other, and you went to them, they would have pretty close to the same thing.
Okay,
because they've all the got thing, to do the works. Same job.
Yeah.
Now I will say that I hunted with a very reputable plot breeder named Curtis Walker. One time, honestly, Curtis Walker, plot man, West Virginia plots.
Yeah,
some of the most impressive dogs I've hunted with. They had a dog that I guarantee you weighed 100 pounds. They called him Copper.
A plot?
Mm-hmm. I hunted with the dog. Plot. I saw it, and they said it was one of the best bear dogs. I mean, as good a bear dog as they've ever had. And he weighed, that dog was huge. It was a plot. I mean, just, and again, going back to this idea of strains, and Ben Jones saying, you know, I asked Ben, I said, what do you like about plots? And Ben said, well, Clay, I don't really like plots. I just like mine.
That was good. That was a mic drop.
Yeah. There's a lot of variation, but I would say the big 100-pound copper dog is an outlier.
Let me tell you what I like about a good plot hound to me, okay? If I were looking for a plot hound,
okay,
here's the things it'd have to have.
Are you?
Always.
We are.
Good. I like the leapers. If you go coon hunting with Jed and Fern, and we won't go coon hunting with Fern anymore. God rest her soul. Yeah. But Jed he loved when we would,
He's a climber.
Yeah. You'd tree a coon by a hill, and Jed would run to the top of the hill and leap from the hill to the top of the tree, and he would do it just to show off. Sometimes if you want to show, and it was like clear, he was like, "Yes, I get to leap." Yep. You could tell he loved it. It's one of the best,
undesirable qualities.
I know. So I want a dog that's a leaper. I want a dog that's a singer.
Yeah,
Jed has a real pretty voice.
Yep, he does.
And he likes to show it off. You know, I don't like him singing at night, but I really love just sitting out there watching Jed just kind of look at the sky and think deep thoughts and sing these beautiful, beautiful songs.
The songs of his people.
Yeah, the songs of his people. So a leaper, a singer, a leaner. You can't walk up to, clearly Jed's my favorite dog.
Do you think these dogs, like if you were breeding, would have any functionality whatsoever? Like, could they do any work at all?
Hold on. So with Jed, you come out, anytime you're near Jed, he just leans on you and sticks his arm up. And
he literally puts his paw on you.
He puts his paw on you and just like, you always know kind of your place with Jed.
Yeah,
like,
real social.
You're loved and then he would be able to tree a coon because if he can't, Clay's going to get rid of him.
You're going to stay.
So those are the four things that I'd like to get out of and Jed kind of pulled the wool over our eyes for a while because
he had a good running mate. It's kind of like me and Brent. People think like I'm good at podcasting. It's only because I run around with Brent.
From it. So Jed ran around with Fern. He looked like a good coon dog. We lost Fern. And all of a sudden, we realize, man, Jed doesn't have a nose at all. He's just kind of a great hype man.
You know, one of the prettiest sights that I've seen in a while was when we stayed in your little cabin up there, and I came down one morning, and I looked through that back door, the window, and is it Jed?
Yeah.
Jed was sitting there like he owned the world at the end of your barn with the doors open. He was just singing. I mean, it was just beautiful. I went from my phone, I thought, well, I probably won't take going through that window, but it was really
it is
it
pretty.
Was
it was I know really exactly pretty. What you're talking about.
Yeah,
he likes to sit
Old
at the
Jed.
By the barn, and you could see the mountain. You know, with the barn doors open, you can look over Jed's shoulder and see the mountain, and he's just singing those songs. His people, the songs of his people.
Singing those songs, I come out in the middle of the night. Hush!
Yes, true.
My neighbor, like, I have a few neighbors that probably could hear me yell. Like, you can't see
they're
any neighbors
from my
house.
They're more frustrated by you than the dog.
Yeah, they're,
well,
they're,
also
they probably
all
got
of
some
Clay's
stories.
Kids. Yeah, and his wife are a little more frustrated.
What you
I
need to be
Clay,
doing...
I can sleep through the dog. I can't sleep through him.
Yeah, you ought to just go heat up that bottle.
Yeah. Quit hollering at them dogs and heat that
right.
bottle up. Man, this has been a great render. This story to me is really special. Really enjoyed telling it. It was a lot of fun. We're gonna do something a little different the next couple episodes of Bear Grease. I'm not gonna tell you.
Someone need a banjo?
Well,
it's actually gonna be an hour and a half of just banjo.
Yeah, I've kind of opened up a can of worms with this banjo player thing because I've got very specific needs.
Requirements.
And, like, they can't be strings attached. Like, it's not like...
Well, only to the banjo.
Yeah, hopefully.
It's five strings.
Yeah.
That's the only five you
would
get.
Would you go four?
If they played a four-string banjo.
There is a four-string banjo.
Okay, well, but just strings on the banjo. That's all.
You need
now,
five strings.
But clearly...
Not interesting. No strings attached. Have to be named JB?
Yeah. Well, they can be named whatever.
Okay.
But
we're calling
and obviously yeah. I would be nice to this person and stuff like that. I like to I used to own a business and I like to undersell and over deliver. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And be like,
manage
hey,
expectations.
Guess what? Mm-hmm. This is gonna be terrible. And then they come in thinking it's gonna be terrible and then they realize it's not that bad.
It's mediocre and it's great.
Yeah.
It was
right.
a short lived business.
So if we had a banjo player, actually it would be really great and you'd probably have the time of your life for just an hour or so. Man, so great to see everybody. Thanks for coming up, Dad, Josh, Misty, Isaac, Brent. So good to see everybody. Long Hunters, go ahead and pre order it.
Okay.
So big. It would be, you know, there's certain things that you can lean on your audience and just be like, please do this. Just do it. Just for us.
Give it to someone for Christmas.
Yeah. And it's
a prepaid audiobook.
It'll be,
for next year.
It's mm-hmm. for the cost of the audiobook, it is a lot of entertainment. Like, not just entertainment that's going to just like flush through your brain, actual educational entertainment.
You can be the smartest person in the room.
Yeah.
Speaking of entertainment, we're going to watch. You can cut this out. Shepherd Newcomb play basketball. Last time I went, he scored 38 points.
Yes, that's
pretty
right.
Pretty big deal.
Yep.
Oh, Shep's
got
a
game
season.
Tonight.
He's doing good.
Excellent.
Shep had a four-streak game of scoring over 30.
Happy yeah. birthday, Bear John.
Yeah, that too.
And he's only a sophomore.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys. Thank you so much.
I'm sure a lot of you guys remember the old ceremonial hunting tradition of eating the heart out of the first animal you kill. Meat from those organs are among the most nutrient-rich foods on the planet. You can get those same benefits your ancestors craved via convenient daily capsules from Heart and Soil. Find out more at heartandsoil.co. And remember, use code MEATEATER for 10% off your purchase. You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.